Hello there. Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. We're taking a break from our regular podcast format this week to talk to Eric Repair, executive chef at the New York City restaurant Le Bernardin. He's perhaps best known to cable-watching foodies as a guest judge on the reality show Top Chef. Repair's resume as a chef is really unparalleled. He became executive chef at Le Bernardin in 1994. The following year, he earned a 4-star rating from the New York Times, which he was awarded 3 additional times, making his restaurant the only restaurant to hold that distinction. Oh yeah, and he did all that before he turned 30 years old. I spoke with him in anticipation of his visit to Bloomington, Indiana, where he'll be appearing with Anthony Bourdain in Good vs. Evil. The two friends have known each other for a long time, and they've probably shared plenty of meals together. So I wanted to know if there was anything about food or eating that they just didn't see eye to eye on.
I don't understand the expression eye to eye.
Is there something about eating or food in general that you guys really disagree on, basically?
Ah, okay, I get it. I think as an overall, we agree on what is good food and what is bad food. Anthony has trained his palate for a long, long time. I mean, first of all, he was a chef, and then, as you know, he has a show and travels a lot and eats a lot and tests a lot of food from different cultures. And I think we have the same understanding that good food, it's a universal thing. It's not attached to one culture or another. And when it's good, it's good. And when it's bad, it's bad. However, Anthony can eat an enormous amount of sandwiches and hot dogs and things like that that I cannot.
You just don't like those?
I'm fine with one.
Okay. So maybe not 6 or 7 hot dogs in one sitting. I understand.
Well, he doesn't do that normally, but on the show I have seen him eating hot dogs after hot dogs, and it's something that I definitely don't do.
Recently, we've heard a lot of news about Paula Deen coming out as having type 2 diabetes.
Uh-huh.
So as a chef, do you think you have a responsibility to serve or promote healthy food, or at least to have your customers' long-term health in mind?
Well, it's 2 things. When you talk and when you are on TV or with a journalist and talking about nutrition or healthy food and so on, and what you can serve in your restaurant. So when someone comes to the restaurant, very often the person is seeking an experience, is looking for something special. And therefore, you're not necessarily caring if it's the right amount of starch, fiber, the exact amount of calories that the person should have. So when you compose a dish, you don't think like that. Now, when you talk about it, you should definitely be concerned by the health, your own health, the health of the people you are feeding as well. It's a little bit of a paradox and contradiction, but I will give you the example. Like if someone comes to Le Bernardin and wants to have 3 desserts every day, I'm going to definitely talk to the person and tell him he shouldn't have 3 desserts. The way we cook here is fairly healthy, but again, my priority is to create a very harmonious dish, a delicious dish, but at the same time, in the back of my mind and by instinct, the way we cook here is fairly healthy. But I will certainly not go on television and encourage people to eat a cheeseburger in between 2 donuts, that's for sure.
No. Well, you were speaking a little bit about this, so we'll go to a question that a listener actually wanted me to ask you. She was curious about how you go about creating new dishes.
I work in collaboration with my sous chefs. I have 7 sous chefs, and we all are passionate about food, and we all go to different restaurants, visit different markets, are interested and approached by farmers who bring new products and so on. And we explore new techniques. And very often I say, oh, I would like to see what we can do with that technique and this ingredient, for instance, and let's see what comes out of it. And then in collaboration, we go to the next level where we are like, can we do a dish with that? So when we agree, we meet again and we try to cook the raw material in different ways. And then we try to add some different elements with it, like acidity. Sometimes we try to add saltiness, some spiciness and so on, and see if it works with that ingredient. And ultimately, we come up with a result. And then, depending how good we have been in terms of creativity, it goes to the menu or not. But it's all dictated by one mantra. And the mantra, Le Bernardin being a seafood restaurant, is the fish is the star of the plate. So therefore, whatever we do, whatever we put in the plate is to elevate the qualities of the fish.
Let's talk about your studies of Buddhism. Talk about how you can reconcile killing animals for food with your beliefs.
Well, it's definitely something that I'm thinking about very often. Buddhism doesn't necessarily ask you to be a vegetarian. So it's no such a thing as, I am a Buddhist, I'm a vegetarian. Actually, we have a very famous Buddhist, the Dalai Lama, who cannot be vegetarian because he gets sick. So by nature, we are omnivores. But what I think is important in killing animals and eating animals is to have the respect for the soul of the animals. It's to try to kill the animal in the most efficient way without creating suffering. And I will add another element is that we have to think also about sustainability. So all those things are in my mind. Now, as you know, when you catch fish, especially from big boats and so on, the fish suffers, definitely, because it's out of the water and it's a long process. It's something that I'm thinking about, and hopefully in the future we will find some techniques to make sure that the fish is killed immediately and so on. I don't have a guilty trip, though, but once a year I ask some lamas, which are Tibetan monks in Nepal and in Bodh Gaya in India, to do a ceremony which is lighting 1,000 lamps, and it's an offering to the soul of the animals that we have killed and served at the restaurant.
Let's talk then about the culture of factory farms. This sort of piggybacks onto that idea. Factory farms don't exactly have a stellar track record when it comes to treating animals with respect, either in life or in death.
That's for sure.
As a restaurateur, how do you fight that? And as, you know, someone who just cooks in my kitchen myself, what can I do to change the culture?
You know, I mean, at a restaurant here, it's an expensive, luxurious restaurant. I can buy from small farmers. It's an extra cost. A lot of people cannot necessarily pay for an animal that is humanely raised, which means your lamb or your beef or duck, etc., or chicken, was running in the fields, happy, enjoying life until you slaughter him. The majority of the food that we see in markets, especially when it's affordable, it is true that they are raised in factory farms and therefore have a miserable life and they suffer a lot. What we can do is maybe allocate more money to the budget of eating, also changing some of the habits of eating and eating less meat protein during the week. That will encourage small farmers to create some businesses that are sustainable and also create a better environment for the animals.
Well, and let's now go to start to talking about cooking food. So first of all, do you garden? Do you grow any of your own food?
No, because we are in the heart of Manhattan, it's hard to grow anything. And we are a seafood restaurant, so most of the ingredients are seafood, so they don't grow, they swim.
Yeah, sure.
As for the produce, we use local farmers in season, and then when it's not the season, we use, no matter what, organic products as much as we can, which I think today is in between 85% and 95% of the time we have organic. From farmers from afar. But in season, we definitely promote the small farming in the region of New York.
Oh, that's
New
excellent.
Jersey.
You guys sort of have a similar problem in New York City that we have in Indiana, that the growing season stops once we get the frosts and the
yes.
snow comes. So for people who want to eat locally, sustainably, year-round, who live in climates like ours, what sort of advice would you give them?
Well, you can always eat a lot of grain and root vegetables. However, you're going to go nuts. I mean, in the sense that you're going to be bored, not like it's dangerous for you. But you can try to avoid eating tomatoes and strawberries and raspberries and apricots and things like that in the middle of January because it's not in season, and therefore you can have many other options. In terms of vegetables, you have, of course, carrots, turnips, parsnips, root vegetables, celery, etc. In fruits, you have pears and apples and citruses in the winter. But I think you have to find a middle way in between what is available in your region and what you really want and can bring, and try to not be obsessive neither on eating only what you have in your region, being a locavore, because it doesn't make any sense, nor bringing everything from 5,000 miles away.
Well, you mentioned parsnips there as a vegetable that you can eat in the wintertime. Give me some advice for cooking parsnips in an interesting way.
Parsnips is a great vegetable. It has a lot of flavor. I like it very much in puree, but I also like it cut in pieces and cooked with water, a bit of butter and salt. It's a very flavorful, very delicate vegetable.
And then another vegetable that everybody across the board seems to have problems with and wanted your advice on, eggplant.
No, the eggplant, it's not a difficult vegetable to cook. What you need to do is to peel the vegetable because the skin really very often is very thick and doesn't bring much. And then is to slice the vegetable in half an inch slice going lengthwise. You put a little bit of salt on top of it and you let it like that for half hour to an hour, and you will see some water come up on top. And the salt will take most of the bitterness that the eggplant can have. And then you can saute your eggplant with some oil and garlic and onions and in cubes or in slices and eat it like that, like a steak almost. Eggplants are delicious. And typical dish that eggplants are delicious with and mix well in a summer or in a spring is ratatouille, which is not a stew, but it's saute zucchinis, onions, eggplants, garlic, herbs like oregano or thyme. And sometimes when you have tomatoes, you add some chopped tomatoes in it, and it's a delicious dish, and the eggplants can shine really in it.
That does sound good. So you're a successful restaurateur. Bloomington, Indiana is a college town. So restaurant business, as I understand it, really ebbs and flows when the students are in town and then when they leave over the winter and over the summer. So give some tips for restaurants in this area about how to survive during the times when the students aren't paying money in their restaurants.
I mean, if I was running a restaurant there, what I will do is that I will try to avoid having a large menu with too many items. And I will try to have a menu that is the menu of the day or potentially the menu of the week, and then have not too many choice and cook fresh food on a daily basis in small amounts, knowing that obviously it's a slow season. And when you run out of it, you close the restaurant. When you have no more food, it's sorry, come back tomorrow. Because the bigger your menu is, the more you're going to have to spend money in paying salaries, and the more you're going to have to spend money in terms of having ingredients, and you're going to lose a lot of the food because you don't sell it. I mean, I wouldn't do that at Le Bernardin because it's a luxurious restaurant, and we cannot say, hey, sorry.
Right.
It's too late, and we work only on reservation. So, but if you have a small restaurant, you're a small operator, I think people will appreciate the fact that they know that your food is very fresh and is cooked for the day, and that at the end, instead of serving something mediocre, you're rather to close.
Then one more question. People are going to see you in Bloomington. You're going to be with Anthony Bourdain for the Good versus Evil program. So tell us what we can expect from this.
Well, the unexpected is that you're going to laugh a lot, or maybe it's expected, I don't know. But Anthony and I have a very good dynamic. He loves to roast me at the beginning of the show, so it's pretty painful. And then I return the favor. We mostly improvise. He never knows what I'm going to torture him on, and I never know what kind of questions he's going to ask. And then after that, we sit down and we talk about some more serious topics. For instance, sustainability is a topic that we are talking. We talk about what we believe the next trends are. We talk about how to run a restaurant successfully and so on. And then we open to the public. They ask questions. We answer. And it's actually a lot of fun. I mean, I have fun with him, and I think the public feels it and suddenly feel part of the game, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chef, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Read the complete conversation with Chef Eric Repair on our website, eartheats.org. And hey, if you cook parsnips or eggplants the way he suggests, write a comment to let us know how they turned out. Next week, we'll be back to usual. Looking forward to seeing you then. Thanks for downloading. I'm Annie Corrigan.